Beyond the perception of experimental only material means and qualities. We have no other power than to offer our respectful obeisances and prayers unto you, the transcendental person. The chanting of your auspicious transcendental qualities will wipe out the sins of all mankind. That is the most auspicious activity for us, and we can thus partially understand your supernatural position. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has nothing to do with material perception. Even the impersonal Shankaracharya says, Narayana Paro Vyakta, or Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is beyond the material conception. Unquote. We cannot concoct the form and attributes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We must simply accept the description given in Vedic literature about the Lord's form and activities as stated in Brahma Samhita
29.
I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor, who is tending the cows, yielding all desires, in abodes built with spiritual gems and surrounded by millions of purpose trees. He is always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. We have some conception of the Absolute Truth, his form, and his attributes simply by reading the descriptions given in Vedic literatures and authorized statements given by exalted personalities such as Brahma, Narada, Shukadeva Goswami, and others. Srila Rupa Goswami says, Atak Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Drayam Indriyai. Quote, we cannot conceive the name, form, and qualities of Sri Krishna through our material senses. Because of this, other names for the Lord are Adho Sanja. What does that mean? Adho Sanja, beyond the senses. Akshaja is eyes or senses. Adho Sanja, beyond the range of the senses to perceive. And Aprakata. Manaprakata is material, and aprakata is non-material. He's beyond the material realm. Aprakata. So, we cannot conceive the name, form, of qualities of Sri Krishna through our material senses. Because of this, other names for the Lord are adhoksaja and aprakata, which indicate that he is beyond any material senses. Out of this causeless mercy upon his devotees, the Lord appeared before Maharaj Nabi. Similarly, when we are engaged in the Lord's devotional service, the Lord reveals himself to us. How? Seva mukhihi jiva dhavas vayamevas parakyada. This is the only way we can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what that phrase, Seva mukhihi jiva dhavas vayamevas parakyada. By controlling the senses beginning with the tongue, he can achieve vayamevas parakyada. He can appear before us, although we can't be perceived otherwise. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Vakyamam Abhijanati Yavanyasya Sutakataha One can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead through devotional service. There is no other way. People have done it before. We have to hear from the authorities and from the Shastras and consider the Supreme Lord in terms of their statements. Conversely, we cannot imagine or concoct forms and attributes of the Lord. End of book. There are a few main points that are being presented here. In the purport, Prabhupada is emphasizing one of them, which the Brahmins are directly stating. We have no capacity to understand your form. And that's the emphasis in the purport. The whole of religion, or the whole of dharma, the whole goal of human life, according to the Vedic conception, is to know God and to love Him. And if you were to ask people of different religious backgrounds, aside from what your rituals are, do you agree with this statement that the goal of your religion is to know God and to love Him? What are people going to say? Yes. They may have this conception, that conception of what He is. They may have this process, that ritual, different means, but the goal is clear. So, how to reach that goal? Emphasis in the purport is by this process of serving Him, of kama, of vijanati, not by the process of imagining, by mental speculation. He may be like this, he may be like that. As is the process of ascending knowledge, like this in science, perhaps maybe. The preponderance of evidence is, so it's inductive. It's never definitive. They can't make a concluding statement about anything. The cause of creation, or what's happening in a microcosmic event, from the biggest to the smallest, it's perhaps maybe. It seems that, in my opinion, such and such. But there's nothing conclusive. Certainly, there's nothing conclusive about the world. What to speak of spiritual. It's not the means of knowing God. So, where do we go? If that means is checked, what means is left? But the ascending process is not to be accepted, the descending process. And so we have the Brahmanas who are assisting Navi. Navi is doing the austerities, the Brahmanas are assisting him with the performance of the yajna. Both the Brahmanas and Navi and his wife Mary Devi are in a position that we don't know. But at least they're accepting the means to know. They're accepting the means to know by, according to Vedic description, This is the form of the Lord according to the Vedic description. This is the process of achieving it. Share a little anecdotal piece of information from what the ascending process cannot do. When I was senior in high school in America, our family took part in what's called the American Field Service, AFS, where students from America go and study abroad for 1 year, and students from abroad come and live in homes in America for 1 year. It was during the senior year of our education. So somebody from our school went somewhere, somebody from another place came to our home. And the person who came was from Japan. And he was a brilliant person. Not just smart, but brilliant. What he had learned before he came to America, it was like a downgrade to come to America to, because he was, the scope of his intellect and the way that intellect had been fed by higher mathematical training, especially in science, it was like a disappointment for him to come to America. So, after our graduation, I didn't see him for a number of years. Our lives went in different directions, and I had become a devotee after like fourth year of college, and I just didn't hear from him. And then at some point in time, some years later, I received a call, and the call was from his name was Kent Ajiri. And he was coming to New York, and he knew that I was living in New York, and he requested, I'd like to come and visit, I'd like to come and see the Statue of Liberty. And I said, well, I've never been to the Statue of Liberty myself, although I live in New York, but we can go there. Sure. So he came, and it turns out that he had just finished his third PhD. His first PhD was in mathematics, his second PhD was in physics, and his third PhD was in microbiology. And his third PhD was in University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And what he was studying was, with use of higher mathematics and physics and microbiology, when a frog cell divides one into two, what happens? One cell becomes two cells. Higher math, laws of physics, and microbiology. So we're riding in the subway, and he's explaining this to me, heading for the lower end of Manhattan, where we can go look at the statue. We never went to the statue, but we just went to the guy. We can look at it from the land. So he said, this is what I've been doing. And I said, what if the reason that the dynamic behind the cell of a frog dividing into two had some spiritual influence, like the presence of the soul or something like that? Just supposing that was the cause behind it. What would science say? He gave a very honest answer. He said, we can't even talk about that. Because it's not measurable. It's not within the realm of empirical science. I said, that's an honest answer. I didn't say the next thing, which is, that's the case, you'd be wasting your time. But life comes from life, so whatever the particular dynamic is, you could measure 1/10,000 size the tip of a hair. Prabhupada explained on one occasion, this is smaller than the atom. Have scientists seen an atom? No. They know properties of an atom. Have you seen an electron? No. They know the properties of an electron. They can do all kinds of things with electrons. The whole field of electronics. There's so many things. And our present life is dependent upon it. When the power goes out, turn on a generator. Because, you know, we can't, we're addicted to electrical power. But what's an electron? Who's seen one? You know, if you can't see it, then it doesn't exist. That's, you know, one can make that an argument. I don't believe in electrons. Because I've never seen one. What to speak of the realm of spirit, which is not measurable by any material thing, although its presence can be understood by measurable symptoms like life. That life comes from mind. Anyway, this is what to speak of the Supreme Lord, who can't be understood by the intellect or the mind. Then what to do? By descending method. That's what the Brahmanas are saying. You know, this is... What can we do? We can just follow what the Vedas say and do what the Vedas say and offer our prayers unto you according to the description within the Vedas of who you are and perform our yajnas according to the description within the Vedas. And those that are so faithful, the Supreme Lord, if he chooses, can disclose himself. I'm like this. Prabhupada describes that in the process of deity worship. For those of you that like worshiping deities, the access to realization of Krishna's identity, Prabhupada described in this way. When you worship Krishna in his deity form, very faithfully, very diligently, very carefully according to the injunctions of the Vedas, very lovingly, one day, Krishna will speak to you. And Krishna will say, I am like this. But what about before Krishna says, I am like this? What are we to do? We're to act faithfully. Same as the Brahmanas. How many yajnas have these Brahmanas done? How many austerities have now been done? How much devotional service have combined them all together? Had they done it, there was something that was inspiring them to continue when they hadn't yet seen the form of the Lord. And that's some reciprocation from within their heart. And it's the nurturing of faith. And as faith is nurtured, further realization comes as a nurture of faith, eventually the purification of existence altogether, so that senses fully free from the propensity to be instruments of enjoyment, instead the senses being instruments of service unto Krishna, for Krishna's enjoyment. Then Krishna appears, as in this case. So the points are two main points. One is we can't imagine. You can imagine any form you like, and that's bogus. But the experience of the form of the Lord is not through imagination or mental concoction or some system like that. The form, the experience of the Lord's form is by this descending method. And if he chooses to make himself visible before us or in other ways inspire our faith, so be it. That's his prerogative. Our position is service. And his position is to do what he likes. He takes care of the result of our service, however he likes. That's our relationship. He is the master, we're the servant, whatever he likes. simply to please him, whether he shows himself or not, just like Caitanya Mahaprabhu said. You can do this or that. You can be present before me. You can leave me brokenhearted. You can crush me with your embrace. You can trample me under your feet. You can do with me whatever you like. I am your servant. You are the master. Please engage me in some service. And the Brahmanas are praying to say, we have no qualification. You're completing yourself. You don't need anything. But please accept some little service from us. At the installation of the Rukmini Dwarvanish deities in Los Angeles, they're observing their 40th anniversary this year of the installation of Rukmini Dwarvanish. And Prabhupada established very strongly the standard of deity worship for the whole world during this time in Los Angeles. He personally trained devotees how to, and had others, you know, how to worship the deity properly, and had devotees from all over the place come to Los Angeles and learn how to worship the deities properly, because it was one of the things he really wanted to have happen, proper standards of deity worship. And at the installation, Prabhupada expressed the mood of the worshiper, very similar to what the Brahmanas are saying, only Prabhupada said with such devotion, he began crying. He said we should approach the deity in a very humble mood, saying or feeling, my dear Lord, I have no qualification. I have only this qualification. And his voice started to tremble and said, I am rotten. I am fallen. Please accept. This is all I have to offer. Please accept this service. And he gathered his composure again and continued. In this way, once you worship the deity. Not just a duty to get on and stay on with the next thing, but it's a core part of our Krishna consciousness, is a core part of our life. Serving the deity form of Krishna, just as chanting holy name of Krishna, hearing the message of Krishna. Through these powerful deity worship, chanting, hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, these are three of the five processes mentioned by Rupa Goswami, that if any one of them, if performed offenselessly, is sufficient in a moment to awaken Bhava Bhakti. We're not making Bhava Bhakti. We're not approaching those processes properly. The instruction is there, the opportunity is there, the mercy is there. Our eagerness for that mercy is not sufficient. But for Nadi and the Brahmanas, obviously it was. The Lord is here. How they can offer their prayers directly. And even seeing him, they're not proud. Oh, we made it. We reached the top of the mountain. Victory. They're maintaining this very humble mood. They have no qualifications. They don't have any way of understanding you. Still, you come. They have no qualification to serve you. Please accept. That's the heart of a devotee. Very meek, very humble, very eager to render service of any kind, and appreciating very deeply the mercy of the Lord, appreciating deeply the process of approaching him. A devotee wants to, I'll just end with this, a devotee wants to be protected from pride that comes with little spiritual progress. One of the, in Madhuri Kandambani, there's a statement. There's four kinds of anarthas. Anarthas are unwanted things. Artha is something one. anartha is something unwanted. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti says that these anarthas can be categorized according to the place from which they arise. And one of the sources of where anarthas arise is due to one's past sinful activities. And then he uses the process of devotion is so strong that the reactions to one's past sinful activities, or the anarthas of the heart, can be eradicated just by bhakti. The second category is a little curious. Because the first one is easy to understand. The second one is anarthas that arise from one's past pious activities. So how does that work? Past pious activities produce pious fruits. And when we're presented in our lives with pious fruits, what happens? We want to enjoy them. The tendency to enjoy the fruits of one's past piety is an anartha. So what's the antidote for that is devotion. If there's some fruit of one's past pious activity, here's some opportunity to offer something to Krishna. Bhakti eradicates that anartha. So then the next category is offense. Anarthas that arise due to offenses. And he says there's different categories of offenses. One of them, the first one he mentions, is seva aparad. Just like Rupa Goswami speaks of that in that devotion, there's different offenses to be avoided when worshipping the Lord, specifically when worshipping the deity, the form of the Lord. But the process of chanting the holy name eradicates the reactions or the anarthas that may arise from sevaparada. But then there's namaparada. That's like checkmate, because if you continue to make offenses when chanting the holy name, you become filled with anarthas that arise from offenses to the holy name. And there isn't a solution, just stop chanting the holy name. You have to continue chanting the holy name, striving to overcome the offenses. So that's the main topic of that chapter. How to overcome the offenses in chanting the holy name. But then there's a fourth category, and that is anarthas that arise from a little success in spiritual life. And when one gets a little success in spiritual life, same as number two, when one tries to be the enjoyer of that little success in spiritual life. Particularly mentioned are lava, puja, and pratishtha. Someone gets a position, someone gets some recognition, someone gets some acclaim, someone may receive some something, some gift or some money or something. You know, oh, Prabhu, we'd like to honor you for your nice service. And when pride is there in the heart is not pure. One wants to be an enjoyer of that little something. And so mind is very tricky. This is a very nice example. It's the cover picture of this volume, where the sages, the brahmanas, and Nadi and Mary were seeing the Supreme Lord. The first thing that they say is expression of humility. You don't have any qualification. Same thing Prahlad Maharaj said. I don't have any qualification. That's part of his qualification. Of thinking in a humble mood towards the Supreme Lord. There's another very nice example of this, and I'll end with that. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's deliverance of the leper, Vasudeva, consistently Krishna Das Kaviraj calls him pronouncing the name of the leper. There's the Brahmana Kurma. But Vasudeva is also a Brahmana. But somehow he had this horrible, not just a mild, horrible case of leprosy. So horrible that his body was rotting. So it was rotting so badly that worms were living in his body. But his disposition was when a worm would fall out of his body, he'd find a place where it fell out like that. That was Vasudeva's platform of the ocean surface. So this is their habitation. Like, you know, they're hungry. So put them back in his rotting body, the same hole they came out of. So when Lord Chaitanya saw him and embraced him, and his body became completely not only restored, beautiful, golden, bulging form, his first thought was, pride will easily enter my heart that I received this mercy from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Please protect me from pride. A devotee by nature, to qualify to receive the fullness of the mercy that Krishna wants to give us. It's just like, you know, the narcissus are compared to clouds in the sky. So there's lots of clouds here in Thailand this time of year. And when the clouds are in the sky, maybe it's nice because it's cooling, but the full rays of the sun you don't experience when there's clouds in the sky. But the nice, bright rays of the sun that everyone in clouds are above. A narcissus are like clouds. So one who wants the fullness of the Lord's mercy, just like the fullness of the rays of the sun, the clouds have to go away. And you can, from our side, Krishna can make the clouds go away. We can't. The clouds of our narcissus. And this is this last one. Not trying to be the enjoyer. By bhakti, overcoming the tendency to be the enjoyer of a little spiritual success. Taranga Rangini is the term that's found in another part of it. It's the stage of unsteadiness in bhakti. Its last stage is wanting to ride the wave, little wave, it's the name of it. Ranga is a wave, Rangini is a small one. Taranga Rangini, riding the little waves of spiritual success. Surfs up, get on the surfboard, and ride the waves of little spiritual success. Consistently, great Vaishnavas, those who achieve the fullness of the Lord's mercy, are free from that. Rupa Goswami, wonderful example. Sanatana Goswami, wonderful example. Madhavendra Puri, after he received the sweetmeats from Gopinath, immediately he left Ramona. Because he knew people want to come and honor me. I don't want that. So he left. Most people want honor, but they work really hard to get some recognition and honor. And if they don't get it, without recognition, then devotee is being appreciated. You know, we don't want to receive that praise. But it's not like, you know, go and hide in a dark place somewhere or become like a turtle and like, you know, that's not loving exchange. Loving exchange is where, in turn, the praise that is offered by someone, devotees become very expert in learning how to turn that praise around and praise the other one. Not like, no. But praise the other one. Wonderful example is Sanatana Goswami praising Haridasa Thakur after Haridasa Thakur praised him. When Sanatana Goswami, the oozing sores in his body were removed by Lord Chaitanya's embrace. After Lord Chaitanya left, Haridasa Thakur said, Sanatana Goswami, all of this difficult situation was personally organized and arranged by Lord Chaitanya. He wanted to bring you to a position where you had complete dependence upon him. No other shelter but him. And he cured the problem. You are the recipient of Lord Chaitanya's greatest mercy. And so that one gets close to me and say, no. He said, you were the one who's the recipient of Lord Chaitanya's greatest mercy. Because I see in you both the perfection of achar and prachar. You not only preach by your exhibition of the chanting of the holy name, he's given you the title of Namacharya. Lord Chaitanya has appeared in this world to deliver the holy name, and he's given you the title of Namacharya. But at the same time, your qualities, your behavior, your prachar is superlative, and your achar is superlative. You are the greatest recipient of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. The devotees appreciate one another. You don't have to say, no, or yes, at last, I found an intelligent person. They know how good I am. No, that's unarmed. And the other is impersonal. We want to glorify the other devotee. It's part of growing up in Krishna consciousness, maturing in devotional service, learning how to not fall prey to a little success and be an enjoyer of that. Or to be impersonal and no, just go into seclusion. But to have loving exchanges with other devotees in all circumstances. That's maturity in Krishna consciousness. Make more of a list, but it's transparent. You don't receive it. you don't deny it. There's transparency. Oh, Prabhu, you're seeing these nice things because you're so qualified. You could see good in a dog. That's because you're so elevated. You're praising the other person, or you're praising. This process of devotional service is so wonderful. We're all insignificant. And by the merciful nature of Bhakti, unqualified persons become qualified. Just take me for example. And what's the qualification? Not me, the qualification of the merciful nature of Bhakti. So, in all cases, the list can go on. In all cases, it's not pretense, but genuine humility. Of sadhana is
generally, in I'll say, well, the world, the material world, out there.
We don't have egos in here. It's out there, so. Go ahead.
Yeah. Generally, out there, ego is taken as something negative.
Yes, it is.
If you're egotistical in the workplace or it's very negative. But in Krishna consciousness, it's a false ego, which implies that there's a pure ego.
And what's that real ego? I'm the servant of Krishna. I'm nothing but the servant of Krishna. That's ego. Ego means identity. Who am I? That's ego. False ego is the other kind. That's not who I am. And along with that false ego comes pride. The false ego is out there, carries with it the baggage of pride. But it's not just pride is something separate. And it's just like an add-on of misconception of self. The essence of the misconception of self is I'm this body. Instead of I'm spirit soul. And what does this as a spirit soul, what do? I serve Krishna. That's true ego. The false ego is Krishna disappears and there's all this stuff and I'm fill in the blank. That's false ego. And with it comes an enjoying mood. I'm an enjoyer of something. And I'm proud about how I'm an enjoyer of something. I have so many something that I can enjoy. I've got, look at this toy basket. I've got so many toys. And that's part of false ego. It's just an extension of it. So what do? You don't like toss out ego. You know, have no identity. That's impersonalism. That's what the impersonalists do. I have no ego. I have no identity. I just exist. I twinkle. But we have activity. We have identity. We're servants of Krishna. And then it comes further in a mature or more mature stage, I serve Krishna in this way, in my spiritual identity. That comes in time with maturity. But you know, fundamentally, I'm Krishna's servant. So in this conditioned situation, I have this body, and so I'm serving Krishna according to my capacity. Krishna's giving me this ability, Krishna's giving me this intelligence, Krishna's giving me this life. That's just Krishna. My identity is not this one. I'm using this one to serve Krishna. My identity is in the service of Krishna. And as that consciousness becomes more fixed, exclusive, no other upadis, you know that term? Upadi means designations. Like, you know, I'm a sannyasi. And you're whatever you want, brahmachari or grahastha or whatever you want. So that's not who I am, that's not who you are. We're acting according to our position. That's okay, we should do that. But that's not our identity. The identity is serving Krishna. Spiritual conception of ego. When you remove the material conception, what's left? Spiritual conception of self as ego. The starting point is Ahamrasa, I spirit. And, okay, as spirit soul, what do I do? As a Christian, that a further conception, spiritual conception. And then there's a further spiritual, and what do I serve Christian? In this conditioned state, I serve Krishna this way. In the mature stage in the spiritual world, I have an eternal service to Krishna. I don't know what that is yet. But I know that as the peach tree grows, the fruits are going to come in time. They will come. The bhava stage will come, and the Kaya stage will come, and understanding my spiritual form and all of that will come. And the understanding of him, and he couldn't hear what he said. There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says,
if all the Brahmins are sinful enemies,
ah. Offer our worship to Krishna and the deity.